This is the Climb Podcast. I'm your host, Khadija Toussissé, and I'm happy to welcome you once again for a new episode. I have to say that this one definitely spoke to my spirit in a special way, and I'm hoping that it will create more conversations and ultimately more understanding in our communities. Today's guest is Sadie Brown, a young South African activist who found out when she was only 14 that she was born with HIV. In her country, there are over 7,500,000 people living with this condition, and nearly 60% are women aged over 15. And as you can imagine, they are often marginalized and shamed for their status. Sadie's journey has been quite a roller coaster, as she lost both her parents during her childhood and later had to embrace her newfound HIV status. Yet, now 28 years old, Sadie is one of the most prominent voices in her country, standing strong against discrimination and committed to social justice and health equity. During our conversation, Sadie spoke candidly about how she found out she had HIV, how it impacted her life, and how she intends to maintain transparency in her activism, but also how this condition can affect one's love life and mental health. But before diving into all of that, I asked Sadie to tell me a bit about her early life and how she would describe her childhood.
I would like to say that I had a very beautiful childhood. Literally the first 9 years of my life were like the best years of my life. I say that a lot because before then, like the first 9 years of my life, I was the baby of the family. I'm the youngest of four. So I was the baby of the family. I was spoiled. But then at nine, my father passed on. And I think that was when like the reality of life really started dawning on me as a child. And it was just the beginning of a very not so happy childhood, because literally a year later, my mom then passed on. And besides the fact that, so after the fact that with my dad, I had no understanding of what death meant or what loss meant in that aspect, I then had to lose my mom. And with my mom, I think that was when I really understood the impact, because I started seeing things like having to go to school with things like no lunch to carry, like those kind of things that now really show you that life is no longer as great as it used to be.
I can totally imagine just how incredibly upsetting that time was for you. And do you feel like you were supported enough? I'm sure that maybe other members of your family were trying to sort of fill the gap. How did the rest of your family respond to that?
So shortly after my dad passed on, my mom started getting sick too. So my aunt moved in with us to come take care of her. And when my mom passed on, it was just like, it was just inevitable that my aunt would then like move in and like live with us and raise us. So that was a smooth transition in a way, because she's also like, she's literally raised me, and she's never had to make me feel like I wasn't her child. So I've like grown up in a very secure family structure, even though I was aware that these people are not my parents. But they've never made me feel like I'm orphaned.
Another event that had a massive impact on Sadie's life was finding out that she had HIV. She explained how the diagnosis came about after she took part in a random extracurricular activity with some friends.
So this was in 2009. It was in June. I still cannot remember the exact date, but I know that we were going to, so we were at a school trip, and it was like a youth day event, but it was not on youth day. So we went to this event. We were chosen. I was one of the learners who were chosen at school to go represent my high school at the event. We got there, and there were people doing all sort of like entertainment. There were drama people, there were musicians. And then came people from some organization, from some NGO, and they said, guys, this is who we are. And we do VCT. VCT is voluntary counseling and testing for HIV. So they said to us, like they taught us a bit about HIV and AIDS. And they said, we also do free HIV tests. So if you'd like to have an HIV test, come through, it's free. And as a 14-year-old, I was not dating, I was not yet having sex. So I was very naive in my thinking. And I was just like, let me just do it for the memories, because of course my results are going to come back negative. So let me just go do it. And yeah, just for, you know, the memories and for coming back home and sounding smart and saying I had an HIV test and I know my HIV status.
Absolutely. Just for the experience.
Just for the experience. And that is how I found out that I was living with HIV.
Wow. Can you tell me how that made you feel at the time? I mean, you were only 14 and I mean, you were a child.
I was a child. I think I was quite scared, but more than anything, I was very confused. I don't want to lie. I was so confused that when she said you're HIV positive, like the lady who was conducting the test, the first thing I said was how? And I said, but I'm just 14, I didn't do anything. Because in my mind, I was just like, there is no way I am HIV positive. I even asked for a second test because I genuinely thought it was a huge mistake. And because, I don't know if you know this, but like with the procedure of HIV testing, they use like two testing kids. So she was like, if both the kids are saying positive, then I don't think there's a need for a second test. But yeah, that's pretty much how I found out. I was very confused and I just kept saying, I'm just 14. I did not do anything.
Now, I want you to take a moment and think about your teenage self. Just like I did, I'm sure you just wanted to fit in and be one of the cool kids, or at least one of the normal kids, whatever normal meant in that context. Now, imagine finding out that you have HIV and feeling as though your whole world is crumbling around you. You have so many questions and nothing seems to make sense. Where can you turn to and where can you go from here? Those are a few questions that went through Sadie's mind, and I asked her what she did after getting her results.
About a week or 2 weeks after that incident, I joined the local drama club because I needed a distraction. And with my new schedule, it meant that I'd go to school, go to drama rehearsals, come back late in the evening at like 7 p.m., do my schoolwork and sleep. So for the next 5 months or so, I was very busy that I didn't have time to think about HIV, death or AIDS. And So because this happened in June towards December, because December is AIDS Awareness Month, we now had to start doing plays and like monologues around HIV and AIDS for World AIDS Day. And that is when the triggers came back. You know, like everything from, you know, with drama, it's like it has to be visible. And like with how they were portraying the people who were living with HIV in our play and how we were just talking about it, it really disturbed me and it triggered me a lot. And that is when I knew that I need to tell someone because I think it shows. So I told my teacher at school. She was the first person I told. It was a teacher of mine. I sent her a message saying, I need to talk to you. And I spoke to her. I told her everything. And for the first time ever, I could actually say the words, I tested positive for HIV. And for the first time, I could cry about it and just be human about it. And she was very calm. And I'm still grateful for her reaction because I think with her reaction came that confidence and that courage to say, actually, I can still do this, because she was so calm and so receptive of what I was saying. And she's then the one who said, listen, have you told anyone? I said, no. And she brought me home. We both told my aunt. And it was when I found out that I must have been born with it, because she then said, I knew about your parents. I didn't know that you could have also been born with HIV. So that was when the conclusion was made that I must have either been born with it or like got it from my mom through breastfeeding. After telling her, she took me to the local clinic for like a second opinion. And after those results also came back positive, we then had to tell the rest of my family. And they were okay. You know, the thing about HIV is that we don't really speak about it. So, I mean, as society, we just don't speak about HIV. So even when I was, like when we were telling them, it was just them being like, oh, okay, right? And moving forward, we never spoke about it again. So they didn't mistreat me or anything. We just, like it became an open secret. I call it that. Like we treated it like it was this open secret where we knew what was going on, but no one was saying anything about it. And not even them, like even with me, because I also went into a very long like stage of being in denial because I just didn't, you know, like we were not saying anything about it. And I also think I just put it to the back of my mind and just tried to forget about it until I was 18. By 18, my health had deteriorated. I had started dating. So it was a lot going on. And because I was so deep in my denial stage, I could see that my health had deteriorated because I started getting sores around my chest. And at the time, because I was so deep in my denial stage, I was just thinking it's because of the sun, it's because of the heat. And it made sense to me because I would go out in the streets and these sores would appear and I'd stay home and they would disappear. So I was just like, no, man, it's just the heat. It's just the sun. Not once did I even think it could be HIV. And also, as I mentioned, 4 years earlier when I was 14, we went to the local clinic for a second opinion. But I never went back. So they had my records, but I never really went back. So 4 years later, 2013, I'm 18 years old. Over time, these sores then start moving to my neck and to my face. And now, because I am this 18-year-old, I am so obsessed with looking pretty. I'm just like, I need to go to the clinic. It was only when they moved to my face when I was like, actually, I need to go to the clinic because there's no way I'm walking around with this face. I want to look pretty. So I went to the clinic, and even when I got there, I was just like, I'm just trying to get like an ointment to apply because I need these things off my face. And they are the ones who said, you know, you came here 4 years ago and your records are here. You're living with HIV. These are the effects of you not being on treatment. Your health is deteriorated and you need to get on treatment. And I remember like the whole reality now dawning on me that, damn, I am living with HIV. And the fact that I would need to start getting on pills also kind of validated the fact that I'm living with HIV. So, I mean, that was a huge shock, I guess, or like it was a huge like slap back to reality. And that was when I think the whole pressure around living with HIV got to me. And I was just so angry. And I started like really now expressing my emotions around everything. I got very resentful towards my siblings. As I mentioned earlier on, I'm the youngest of four. So I'm the only one who was born with HIV. So I was just angry at my aunt, at my parents, at my siblings, at
God. I can imagine you asking yourself, why me? And asking God and the universe and your family, why me? Why me?
Yeah. So really, I was just very angry for a very long time.
That outpouring of emotion led Sadie to break her silence and share her journey with the rest of her community. I asked her whether she would describe that as a breakthrough.
You know what? The conversation around breakthrough, I cringe. I cringe because I'm someone who doesn't, like, I don't want to say certain things happened because of a great, like, I'm not a 10 lemons into lemonade type of a person because honestly, I was a child. I didn't need to go through that. But to be fair, I can also see why they had to happen. It doesn't make them right. It doesn't mean that it was great that they happened. But I can see why they had to happen. Because to be honest, if I didn't test positive at 14 at that time, in the place that I live at, where stigma is so rife. And as a 14-year-old, I literally thought I was the only one in this community who was living with HIV. So I can see how that happened for me to turn out this way. And I am very grateful at the fact that my journey has turned out this way. So yeah, I don't really think it was a breakthrough, but I see how it happened. And I see why it had to happen.
So Sadie is now 18, and due to life-changing events, she decides to speak up. In an open letter posted on Facebook, she talked about her HIV status. And of course, she got a lot of responses.
Speaking about my open letter, so this is a letter that I also wrote when I was 18. I think I speak a lot about my 18th year because another thing that people probably don't know is that when I was 14 and testing positive for HIV, I remember thinking, I don't think I'm going to live long enough to even see my 18th birthday. And of course, it wasn't intentional, but somehow at 18, a lot of like life-changing things happened. I started treatment. I disclosed publicly. Like, I could now start saying I'm owning this story. And it's only now at 28, 10 years later, where I can say it looks like my life literally began right where I thought it was about to end. So even the open letter, I wrote it when I was 18. It was just during that phase where everyone was saying you need therapy, and I was just like, no, I don't want to talk to anyone who gets paid to listen to me. I was in a very dark place, and I also knew that I had to release my emotions at some point. So I resorted to writing, and that is how the letter came about. I was writing that letter with tears in my eyes. The response was generally okay. I mean, there were a few people who just felt like, yeah, but why is she doing this? Also because, as I mentioned, I come from a very remote township in South Africa where growing up, this was not something we were used to seeing ever. So even when I was doing this, I knew that I am starting something that has never been done before. And that's scary. And that is why I appreciate my impulsiveness, because I know that if I'd given myself 5 minutes to even think about it, I was not going to do it.
And Sadie definitely didn't stop there. The reaction to her letter was so massive that she embarked on an activism journey that put her to the forefront of conversations around HIV in her country.
So I've gone on to, of course, other platforms, social media, and I think my disclosure on Twitter was what I would say kind of broke the internet at the time. So I spoke about it on Twitter too. Like, it was just a random day, and I just tweeted about it in the evening, and I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning and my phone was just going off. And I was so shocked also at how big the Twitter platform is. I was just like, what's going on? So that happened. And I think that was when the world now started wanting to know about me and just recognizing my story and who I am. And I then went on to now start like doing talks. I now got into like actual advocacy work where I could like speak about such things. I could sit in advisory boards and speak about experiences for people who are living with HIV and how the like policymakers could change life for people living with HIV.
It is well known that activists have to show strength and resilience, but Sadie tells me that it's important that activists remain transparent and vulnerable too.
There is this unrealistic expectation that activists need to always be strong. That's why I'm just like, no, don't call me strong. Don't call me, you know, those things, because I don't want to be seen as something other than just being a human being living with HIV. I have struggles too. The beginning of this year, I put up a post where I spoke about how much I've been struggling in the previous year, which is last year, with taking my pills at times because my mental health was doing a lot. And this was the first time it was happening last year. So it was also a very crazy realization at the time that I'm not taking my pills. And, you know, like, it's the first time it's happening. So it's just like, why am I doing this? But I still would not take them. So I've spoken about it the beginning of this year with people on social media. And the response was generally okay. They were quite supportive. I think what really shocked me at the time was other activists who were just like, no, but you can't say that. You can't post about that. And I'm just like, there's no way I'm not going to speak about these things because I'm human too. And I know that a lot of the things that I experience as a person living with HIV are things that are not unique because I speak to people. So if I say this is something that's happening to me, they can see that it's not just them. And in as much as I'm not trying to like romanticize or make everything I go through deep or make it a thing, I'm also aware that this is just everyday life for people who are living with HIV. And if I'm going to take on this role of being the HIV victor, I might as well serve it honestly and just be honest with who I am.
What you just said is very powerful. And I do have a question, but you do not have to respond to it. Would you say that you struggled with depression, Sadie?
Yeah. So I mean, I go to therapy now, and it's not something I've spoken extensively about because it's still a very new thing that I am working around. But yeah, I am having mental health issues, and currently I'm working on being okay. And once the time is right, I'll, you know, I speak openly about it. I mean, we're about to do like an exclusive on here, but like, yeah, I'm struggling. Currently, I'm not in a good space at all. But I'm also not someone who has hidden the fact that I'm not in a good space. It's just that I haven't like properly like taken my audience through the journey and said, this is what's going on. It will happen in due time.
Of course, when one finds out that they have HIV, the way they navigate sex and intimacy is different. But for Sadie, it doesn't necessarily mean that life cannot be pleasurable.
You know, the thing about HIV is that it is a chronic illness like any other. The only thing with HIV is that because it is sexually transmitted, it then gets this huge stigma attached to it because sex also has its own stigma. And as a community, we are very, like, we are very weird towards sex. It's like, we all know that it's good, but we act like we don't know that. We act like we want to demonize people for having sex. So much that when a person says they are living with HIV, the first thing people think of is promiscuity. And it's just like, why would that be your first instinct? To this day, I have people who say I'm lying when I say I was born with HIV. People say things like, I am lying. And by saying I'm living with HIV because I get paid to lie to people on social media, I don't know why people think I'd be so bored. So there are a lot of preventative measures of preventing HIV. There's PrEP, there is PEP, there are condoms, there are ARVs, which also work as preventative methods. But because we already have the stigma towards sex, it makes it very difficult for us to even see life normal for people living with HIV. The thing about dating with HIV is that you have to be honest with your partner. You also have to be honest with yourself. You know how a person is going to treat you just by how they speak about HIV. Like, you can have a conversation about HIV and you can just see your partner and you can hear them and what they say about it. Yeah, so you just speak to a person. I can't really tell people when to disclose or how to do it. I personally do it very early in a relationship, and I let people do whatever feels right to them. We also go through this thing as people living with HIV where we feel like we have to be so thankful that, oh, this person loved me so much with HIV that I have to now be so thankful to them for loving me. And it's like, this person loved you because you are a human being. You were a human being before you had HIV. HIV just happens to be a condition you are living with, and you are managing it well. So it's not even something that is defining who you are. Even our partners need to also understand that the entire burden of me, of you not getting HIV, should not just be dependent on me. You know, we speak about things like PrEP, speak about things like PEP, condoms, and all those things. And as a person who is HIV negative in the relationship, you also need to pull some weight. You also need to show that you are also intentional about not getting exposed to HIV. Make your own, make it your own.
Absolutely, it takes two.
Yes, like let it be your own responsibility for you to also take care of your own sexual health. Don't now let it be my burden that I have to make sure that I don't infect you with HIV. I have a lot of things to worry about. You know, me too.
Before we leave, Sadie tells me about the next steps of her activism and how intersectionality is at the core of her approach. If you are not familiar with the notion of intersectionality, here's a quick definition, but please do not hesitate to seek more information and insights on that matter. Intersectionality is the understanding that different types of discrimination based, for instance, on gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, disability, or class are connected and that they affect each of us differently.
I'm currently working on just speaking about the intersectionality of HIV. And I think that is the journey that I'm also trying to take on. I mentioned my mental health earlier on. I've also been doing great work in speaking about my journey as a queer woman too. So I just, at the moment, I mean, as I grow in my activism, I see other aspects of my life that I could also speak about in my advocacy journey. And that is pretty much what I've been trying to do in trying to speak about the link between everything that I am and how it links into HIV. And it's just me thinking that as soon as we start doing that about everything and about social ills, that is how we will get to win our fight against all these things. Once we stop saying HIV is a Sadie problem and feminism is a Didi problem and all these things, we get to realize that we are all human beings and we can all just come together and fight these things and we will be okay.
Absolutely. I completely agree. We're coming to the end of this episode. Can you please tell our listeners where they can find you and your work?
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Didi. So to everyone listening here, I am Sadie Brown. It's S-A-I-D-Y Brown, the color. That's my last name. I'm Sadie Brown everywhere. So on social media, you can just look me up on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm there and you can find me there.
Well, Sadie, it's been an amazing conversation, extremely inspiring. And again, I just want to applaud you for putting yourself out there on, you know, good days and bad days and still showing up for yourself. Thank you so much for the work you do. And I'm excited for listeners to get to know your work and maybe connect with you.
Thank you so much, Didi. Thank you so much for this. This was really great.
This episode of the Climb Podcast was hosted and edited by Hadijatu Sise. Special thanks to Sadie Brown for allowing us to tell her story. The Climb Podcast is a podcast collaboration between the Channels Media Group and the Ferrell's Larger Institute for Africa at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Thank you for listening.